This is Shirley Bradley, Lisa Fine, and this is March
16, 1993,
and we're at the home of Herbert Hines. And what is your address, Mr. Hines?
1994 Dexter Trail.
And that's Stansville, Michigan.
Yeah.
And we're going to be interviewing him on real history.
Okay, we always start by just getting a little background information about you. Where you're from and where you went to school and those kinds of things, just so that we have some background. Did you grow up around here, Dansville area,
yes,
or the Lansing area?
I've been in this area within 10-mile radius anyway all my life.
Mm-hmm.
I went to Dansville school.
Okay.
I got too smart for the teachers and quit in the 10th grade.
Okay.
And
were your parents farmers out here?
My dad and mother were farmers. I was a farmer, but not at heart. I was a mechanic more or less all my life.
Like Ransom. Right.
And,
so you're interested in mechanical things even from the beginning? Yeah.
Yeah. A guy taught me into going to reel. Well, I tried to get into reel in 1941. They wouldn't even give me the paper, an application. When I was 17, draft age, 4F classification, and so I went back in 51, and I walked in, put in an application, I put my name on it, and my address, and I said, I don't want to work here, and I looked for a place to put the application, I stuck it in a slot, and before I got out of there, Jerry Burns, the personnel manager, called me back in and hired me, and it was 50 people standing in there waiting for a job. And I worked there until one of the last 14 men that worked there.
Mm-hmm. Starting in 1951?
I got November the 6th, 1951, and the last day I worked for the reel, and I worked for the bankrupt company that took over. The last day I worked, I think, was October 19th, 1974. One of the last 14 men that came out of there.
What did you get hired on to do?
I was an electrician.
Did you have training from the war?
I had no training.
You had no training?
No training. I couldn't even keep my taillight lit on my car, actually. They hired me. Floyd Nabalski hired me. And I went to Surgeon Roadblock that night and bought a electrical book, paid 35 cents for it, brought it home and read it, and the light struck, and I knew what, from that day on, I knew electricity.
Wow.
And I just wired trucks. Some of them are more complicated than houses to wire.
Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Yeah.
I made wire harnesses for some of the first models. The engineering garage never even made them.
Mm-hmm.
And
this is for the trucks.
This is for trucks. I made the first wire harness for fire trucks with four-way flasher lights like they have today. I made that wire harness, and engineering says make an extra one so we'd have one for case the truck burns up or needs a harness. And I never got a bit of credit for any engineering that I'd done there.
Hmm.
And anything in engineering didn't want to do or couldn't do, they sent it to me. And when I didn't have electrical work to do, I done anything. I helped anybody, and if I didn't have nothing to do, as I said, I vanished. But I knew that shop inch by inch, where everything just about where people come to me and ask me for parts. That was running short on the line one day of gas tank brackets. Guy come to me and says, you know there's any gas tank brackets? And I told him, go down on dock four. I mean, in the north dock, on the east end. There's probably 500 of them laying there.
Hmm.
See, that's how much I knew about the reel.
Hmm. When you got started on, were you the young, the young one? When you got started on in the early 50s, were you one of the young ones in your
I was
group?
Lowest seniority of my department.
Mm-hmm. So there's some old timers there who, and were like what you ended up being, people who knew their way around.
I was an old timer when I left.
Right, that's what I mean.
I went in there in 19. I went in there in that 51. And I could have went to the motor plant for $1.90 an hour. I went in the repair floor for $1.40 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And the boss says, in 30 days' time, if you prove out, we'll give you a nickel raise. The next 30 days, another nickel. And the next, you got three raises.
Mm-hmm.
I worked there, I think, 5 weeks. On a Friday, the boss come to me with the supervisor and handed me my check. And he says, don't show this check to nobody. He says, we have given you your 3 5-cent raises plus a 10-cent merit. And that put me in a bracket that I was making 10 cents an hour more than a guy that was there for 25 years.
Oh, my.
I had worked there a little over 30 days. I didn't go in there... I didn't go in there to goof off. I went in there to work. On the farm, like that, you went to work, you went to work. You had to work to make a dollar. And that was my theory, to work regardless.
Mm-hmm.
I've had the union on me for doing things that the boss told me to do, but the union didn't like what I was doing.
Mm-hmm. Who was your supervisor that was the one that got you these raises? Right from the
Floyd Nabolsky, the man that hired me, and Floyd Schwartz.
I'm sorry, how did you spell Nabolsky? Would that be?
N-E-B-L-O-S-K-I.
Okay.
You know, somebody's mentioned his name before.
Nabolsky.
Best man foreman. He was, everybody told me I was his pet. Everybody didn't have many people like me in there.
He's passed away now.
Yeah, he's dead and gone now. But he gave me this, he told me one time, he says, if I could get 3 more men like you, I'd lay off them other 12 over here.
Mm.
And I done more work. I found out after I worked there, I done more work the first day, and not knowing what I was doing, actually, I done more work in the first day than the guy that they laid off or fired it done in 3 days. The first day I worked there.
And you didn't really know what you were doing when you went in there.
No, I couldn't even keep my taillight lit, hardly.
You could figure it out.
And this guy by the name of Elton Nisley. He's a little bit of a guy. About,
oh, Elton Nisley.
He's about,
I have his name. Yeah.
About 5 foot. He was a little bit of midget, in other words. He was the guy that broke me in on my wiring job.
Who was that?
Elton Nisley.
Elton Nisley. We have his name on our list.
Oh, haven't we interviewed him?
I don't think
he
so.
He lives on Justimer Street, just east of McDonald's, Muffleheart Street.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we haven't seen him yet, but he's on our list.
You better get to see him, because I heard last time I heard he wasn't
in
too
the
good.
Hospital. Yeah, I remember that.
That's why we haven't,
right.
Because he's been ill.
Right.
But I can still remember him today. We had a flatbed truck like this one that's sitting up here with the neighbors up here. One of the bed was down. It wasn't a dip. And we had to put turn signals on the rear end of it. And there was no harnesses made and like that. And the roll of wire came with the turn signals. And he says, this is how you do it. He took that wire and he hunched up somehow without a creeper. If he went in there over between the axles and stuff and strung that wire and come out with a front wheel, and he says, that's how you do it. And that was my break-in.
Oh!
That was my break-in time.
Yeah.
He said, that's how you do it, and walked away.
Oh, my goodness.
That was
so
my break-in.
You had to connect everything up. You stood there wondering.
Yeah. The time I got it, I went and got Walter Peterson's creeper, which was the next bay over. I got that. The time I got that laid down, he came out on his front wheel. He says, that's how we do it. And that was the only time, that was my break-in for that first day. But I done more work that day than the other guy did in 3 days.
Now, a creeper is a little flatbed thing that you lay on your back
out.
And slide under a truck at wheel time.
You take me and a little guy about this tall.
Yeah, right. I was thinking about that.
He crawled through underneath that truck bed and he never got on the floor. His feet was on the ground all the time.
Wow.
Underneath that thing, then I come out with a front tire. That's how you do it.
Oh, my goodness.
I still remember little Shorty doing that.
What is a harness? I kind of basically know, but for the record, what is a harness? You talked about wiring a harness for these trucks.
Well, making harnesses, that would make a turn signal harness,
The lights.
The lights or the engine harness.
It's a series of wires put together in a certain way.
Series of wires put in the bundle and hooked here, pull this point and that point to make the generator work and the lights work or the motor work or fuel gauges and all that.
Okay.
I would string a wire from this point to that point, do another one to it, and then I'd tip them all together and just leave the end sticking out at certain points.
So they could be connected?
Should be connected to it.
Okay.
I changed so many wire harnesses in trucks, in the old real trucks, and I could stand on my back to the door and I'd take a spinner wrench in my left hand and go under a dash and unhook the whole wire harness off the dash if it was burnt out.
Mm.
Take another wire harness, stand here and put the whole wire harness in, hook it up and stand there and talk to you just like that, and everything worked when I got done. I'd done it
wow.
So many times.
Like in your sleep, huh?
I went crazy one time. The wires, I woke up at night sometimes and then wires get around my neck.
You were in the truck
truck repair department.
Truck repair,
now,
okay.
Automotive electrician.
Now, where was that located, that part of the plant?
Well,
was it on Washington or Baker?
Off of Baker Street, and at the west of the motor plant. The motor plant was like this in the railroad track, and then in another building, and then there was Platt Street run down through here.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It used to be Platt Street. It was on the east side of that.
But you were right off Baker.
Yeah.
You walk in on the Baker Street side.
Yeah, we went in right, went down a ramp right there on Baker Street. There was a ramp deal.
Oh.
We drove the trucks out of there. We used to go in there. Mm-hmm. And then Platt Street run.
North and south.
North and south. It used to go across the railroad tracks, I guess. But anyway, it got blocked off. But they used that as a. But Platt Street used to bring in the trucks going into the dock, or down the receiving dock, and then years later they changed it over up to come in off of Washington Avenue. But
I see.
Okay. Did you work on any military?
No, I worked on very little military.
They were doing a lot of military that whole
time. They built militaries there, but long towards the last one time, Investor Williams, is my foreman. He got mad at me and put me on militaries.
So that was punishment to be on the military? That was a bad thing?
I told people, a lot of them never liked me in there. They always call me Denny Dansville because there's so many Herbs in there. Harry Sales.
And Herbs.
Harry Sales named me Denny Dansville.
Mm.
And they call me Danny. That's why nobody hardly knows who I am, because Danny Dansville was altogether different than Herb Hines. But it was Herb Rich, Herb Zellers, I don't know who he is now, but he started the Penway Coffee Shop out there on Washington Avenue. Herb,
Pennsylvania Avenue.
Yeah. And
Herb Ritz.
Herb Ritz was one of them. No, I don't know. Mm-hmm. So
your alias, Danny Dansville.
I'm alias Danny Dansville.
This is the first alias we've interviewed.
Yes. Yeah.
But that was...
you were on the military just for a little bit.
I was on there when Buster Williams, they got mad at me and they put me on military. And I, basically, they weren't nodding to them as far as wiring, but I asked him what I had to do, and he says, adjust the headlights on the militaries. And he's running 8 jobs a day, and that's all he told me to do. So I done just as he told me. I adjusted 8 sets of headlights, 1 job an hour, taking about 5 minutes to adjust the headlights. And I goofed off, because it made me mad, but also by doing just what he told me to do, it made it easier for me. I had nothing to do. Which drove me crazy anyway, because I had nothing to do.
Yeah.
And Bill Terrell come down there and wanted me to go to Engineering Garage. And I told him that was about the time that Engineering Garage was, so I could see it myself, that it was the place was going, see. And I said, I've been trying to get in there ever since I've been here, but you would never let me. But now there's some reason you want me to go to Engineering Garage. Well, I guess they wanted to get me off of this department.
Why would they want to do that?
I don't know. It was Toya. They people just didn't care for me because I was too. I don't know. I'm an oddball or something. Anyway, I told him. I says, Bill Turtle, personnel manager there, and I says, why should I go over there? I'm working for Baldy Williams. They called him Baldy. Name was Vester, but they called him Baldy. And I said, why should I go over there? I got the best job no one ever had. I says, so-and-so got mad at me and gave me this job. And says, all I got to do is just 8 sets of headlights a day. I says, that's my day's work. 8 sets take me about 5 minutes, but I probably work 40 minutes all day long. Mm. And you know, old Bill Carroll looked at me with a funny look, and he went back to the front and up to his office. And about 20 minutes, I was off of that job. Mm. See, that's about as long as I worked on military.
Well, you tell him it'd take you long to do it.
But I don't care what job they put me on. I was always told I was the only one that never done nothing in there. I never done nothing in there. One time when we started building UPS trucks, these big jobs, we built a big order for UPS trucks.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And there was the model, like something like that.
Oh, we're talking big, like a summary
and,
cab.
They wouldn't, UPS wouldn't buy one unless I checked it out, done the wiring on it. And when they first come out, they had brought up a blueprint which for the girl upstairs to wire these panels that they put in there, all the gauges. And every truck that come down there, I have to take all the gauges out and replace them. And I couldn't figure it out. And they kept me busy wanting them trucks, and I was busier than a duck changing these gauges, getting these trucks running. So I went up to the wire room where a girl named McKay, Gertie, I don't know what her last name was, Gertie something, her name was Gertrude, but she was wiring these panels. I more or less worked with her on new stuff, new orders, and I went up there and I looked at the print and I figured out that they draw the print up for King Cedar gauges, and they were using AC gauges.
Oh.
They were just backwards. And I was up there. I went up there. I'm alone. Nobody. I just go on my own up there. And I got ready to get her print out. So I want to see your print. Why the gauges is wired. And she got it out. And I looked at it and looked at it. And I looked and looked. And I said, something don't look right. And I looked up in the corner here, and it says King Sealy Gauges.
King Sealy?
Yeah, that was a gauge company. It made gauges for Ford and make them for a different company. I says, this is what's wrong, and she felt guilty about it. I says, these gauges are all wired wrong. And about that time, Nelson Unger come up there. He was the boss, the supervisor up there in the cab room. And he started chewing me out while I was doing up there, mucking around with his help up there. And I just told him, I said, I don't care what I talked to him. I don't care how I talked to him either. And I said, I'm trying to get this straightened out so we can get the trucks out the door. And I said, don't you give this little girl hell for screwing up on them wires. I said, she ain't to blame. Mm. I said, you make it, they made a printout for one gauge and you buy different gauges. So that night she got 2 hours overtime with a bunch of rest done. And every truck from where she was at in the whole system had to get wires, the gauges, the wiring changed up. But that's what, they wouldn't let me on the department for that simple reason, because I went out on my own initiative and done things that, I don't know, well, it ain't my job. I've heard that so many times, and it ain't my job. It ain't my job. The union protected all these people, but it ain't my job. And when I could see this, and as the years went by, it took 3 young guys to do what one man was doing before, 10 years before. Mm. They even set out there and they would work pretty good until they get in the Union. And then the Union protected them. They sat down. They have to get someone else in to help them.
Do you think Rio was different because it let people like you do their own work and take more initiative than some of the other auto plants?
I don't know. I was interested for my own benefit,
right,
for a job. See,
did you wanted the job?
I had her and four kids to raise. I built this house by my own hands.
You did.
And just about 99% of it. Anyway, I wanted the job regardless. Mm-hmm. I paid union dues for 25 years. I went to 3 union meetings, I think.
In 25 years?
Yeah.
Did they ever talk to you about not coming to the meetings more often?
No, all they wanted was them union dues.
Mm-hmm.
And
were the union dues very expensive? They take a lot out of your check?
They went, I don't know what they did, though. They went from...
Oh, you got a...
They took them out so much. I don't know. I guess it was $5 a month to last.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. I just was curious. It seems like they always take a big chunk out at Christmas time.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. They didn't have a lot of strikes and stuff in the period that you were there.
After Caput come in there, we went on strike one day.
In 74?
Well, 73 or something
73.
Like that.
Why did you go on strike?
I don't know. I can't remember now. Mm. But anyway, things weren't going right. And they came in there one time when it was going to go bankrupt, I think it was, and then put locks on the gates. They wouldn't let nobody in and let nobody out.
Those that were there had to stay.
Hmm?
Those that were inside had to stay inside.
Well, we didn't have to. I guess we got out of there. But the next day they went on strike, I think it was. And Capper come down. He's all down the Union Hall. Down there on, can't remember the street that was on now. But we was all down there. And Capper come down. He didn't come on the Union property, but he got on the backside of the fence and wanted us guys to come back to work. And we went back to work. But Bishop, the guy that bought that place, used to work at Tractor and Trailer House Company in Williamson. He was born and raised around Williamson.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a guy named Bishop that worked there. He used to work with him at the trailer factory. And he told Bishop told us this, he said, "You come with me," he says, we'll make some money. And he went in the trailer house. They tell him, this is hearsay, he went in every trailer house, trailer manufacturing company in the United States. And I don't know how he got in back into Rio, but the man paid $16 million, they say, for the building, for the property. And here, I don't know how many millions of dollars, but he would have this ship built to Rio and ship it back to warehouses, he said. But they were building, I think they're still building Raymond Rio trucks in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania.
That's right.
Yeah, they're building the Rio Giant in Harrisburg.
And,
you were talking about Capert?
Yeah.
You were just saying that's what he used to do?
Yeah, Phil Capert. He's the one that bankrupted the company.
Mm-hmm.
Besides a lot of the foremans. But one lot of the foremans back a pickup truck in there, load up stuff. I seen him take, one of my guys take military engines that was supposed to be for government, painted them gold-colored, with a gold common engine,
mm-hmm,
and hauled them out for stationary engines.
Hmm. Took them for their own use, you're saying?
Capert used to send these trucks in there. He had a bunch of old beat-up trucks. I mean, this came in there from Vicksburg, Pennsylvania, or Vicksburg, Mississippi. And he came in there, had colored people driving them, and he came in there with a whole bunch of tires on them. And he had whole brand new sets of tires put on them semis and them trailers. He tore up the railroad tracks. It was spur lines down in there.
Mm-hmm.
He tore them all up. And I talked to the driver, he said he was taking them up to, I think around Hope Lake. He's got a big farm up there. He took them railroad tracks right up. I don't think they even belonged to him, but he took them.
The tracks themselves?
The railroad tracks, the iron railroad tracks.
Oh, for goodness sake.
He done.
I wonder what he was going to do with
the
affair.
He just bled it dry, didn't he? He just bled it dry. Yeah.
Took out everything that he thought he could use or
sell
or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. We've heard this from other people, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was your opinion of him, other than what you could see what he was doing? I mean, when he came to talk to the men, how did he appear to
you? Oh, he was just as sweet and all. He was going to do this. In fact, after he got there, he went at it, and we're going to go into big business. This is a new model truck. It produced about a year.
Mm-hmm. This was produced for about a year.
Yeah.
It's Royale, too.
Yeah, and that one there, that Raider.
It's the Raider.
That Raider.
Yeah. Well, that's a beautiful cab, isn't it?
Yeah. I remember when I was wanting a name for that truck there.
Yeah. Oh, really? They were looking for a name? How'd they come up with it?
Somebody in their former office came up with a name.
Yeah, we gave in one or two names for it.
Us workers never got nothing from it.
But they didn't use our name.
That's my old girlfriend. How'd she get in there?
Oh, I gotta see that.
Is that you?
No, yeah. It's her girl he used to know.
Oh, he was serious. I thought he meant you and that he was teasing.
Yeah. She didn't let her graduation day, that girl.
I can't remember her name now.
She pulled hair and everything else trying to get me to marry her. What
was her name?
Boy, this Raider.
He can't remember.
Truck is gorgeous. So you say these trucks were produced for about a year, Raiders and
before the company went.
Royale twos?
Yeah.
My gosh. And you wired these?
Yeah, that's what I worked down there. I worked on all the wire harness. I don't know what I had to reroute. And they've burned up, I've had the wires burn out in the dashes of them trucks.
Oh, really?
And this is another picture of a reel. I've set up in here, and this dash harness would burn out across here.
Mm-hmm.
In here, I've set up here and redone the whole harness. They wouldn't give me a harness to put in. I had her splice wire in here and the wire over here.
So you had to come up with your own invention.
A little wire like that in there, almost. Air conditioning, everything in them, they're just loaded with that stuff.
Mm-hmm. These trucks that you worked on, were they trucks that had been purchased and then they had a problem and they came back and you fixed them, or they were coming off a line
off
that way?
Assembly line.
They were coming off
assembly
line.
Problems. Mm-hmm. Yeah, them were pretty trucks.
Boy, now some of these kind of trucks have big computers in them, too.
I don't ever see them.
Do you ever see any of these on the road?
Yeah, you see some today on the road, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Gosh, they're gorgeous. I've had people tell me that the trucks were good, the engines were great, mm-hmm. they could have continued with proper management.
For them.
They could have continued to produce trucks because the demand was so great.
Yeah.
They were a good truck that lasted.
I talked with a man that came in there one time that was on a project in Canada. As a Canadian project, they're building a dam up in Vancouver or somewhere, British Columbia. They're building a big dam.
Mm-hmm.
And he came in there to pick these trucks up, and they weren't quite ready yet. And I talked with anybody, and this and that, and he's come to pick them trucks up to drive them home. And I says, what are the license costs for them up in Canada like that? He says, these trucks will never be licensed. He says, we'll drive them into Canada on this project, and says they'll last probably year and a half, 2 years.
Mm.
I said, why buy these expensive trucks when you can buy a Chevrolet or a Ford, they ain't gonna last any longer than that. He says, we can go up there with a Ford or a Chevrolet in 6 months' time. He says, we'd junk it.
Oh.
Well, these will last a year and a half to 2 years.
Wow.
So we'll jump a Ford or Chevrolet on the off terrain and twisting since their frames are breaking too. And
what kind of a job was this going to be used on?
Dam construction.
Oh, I see. So they're going into rough areas where they're on nice smooth roads.
Off road all the time.
They're hauling loads.
Across fields and across the alleys and twisting and turning.
And the Rio truck was so good that it would hold up longest.
It hold up for about 2 years where a Chevrolet and a Ford 6 months to 9 months.
Because they weren't put together right, I suppose.
They weren't built rugged. These was built a diamond reel truck was built, I guess they call it, might call it computerized. It was built for a job. It was, you could buy one that, we could buy one that would be for off the road or on the highway. Now, we built, before Cuba went out, I remember building some trucks for Cuba, for Shell Oil Company.
Oh, that's interesting. Hmm.
And they
in
had
the
a
late
big,
50s before Castro came
yeah,
in?
Yeah, yeah. These trucks had a Buta. We put a Buta diesel engine, a big Buta diesel engine in them for Shell Oil Company. The road tester took one of them out on the road, and he come back and said, maybe you should road test them on the road. And he brought it back, and he said, there's something wrong with this truck. Because it went doing 25 miles an hour wide open. And they had me look at it, made everybody look at it. And that truck wouldn't do only 25. We went back to the guy that drew up the order, and he says that truck ain't supposed to do only 25 miles an hour.
Oh, that's what
so
they
we
wanted.
We built them for Shell Oil Company down in Cuba in the mountains, to haul in the mountains. He says 25 miles an hour is all them trucks are supposed to do, and they had a 13, 14-speed transmission and gears in them.
Hmm.
He says, they just want them to move. They don't want them to mm-hmm. speed.
Mm-hmm.
And,
so they're made to order mm-hmm. for the circumstances.
Yeah. Yeah.
I worked overtime one night, a bunch of us guys. We built, I guess, maybe it was 25 trucks that they shipped over to was fenced into China at that time to build a Ho Chi Minh Trail.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Who'd you build those for?
Hmm?
Who'd you build them for, do you know?
Fenced into China government.
Oh, for the government.
For the Chinese
wow.
government.
Yeah, French Indochina.
French Indochina.
Yeah,
oh, yes, of course.
Vietnam,
and
it went, before it was...
You spread up Korea and Cambodia and Pakistan, and they split it up in three different countries.
Yeah.
But the Ho Chi Minh Trail, we built reels and sent over there at the Ho Chi Minh Trail. We sent real militaries to Israel, not Israel, Tehran.
Iran. Iran?
Roy Archer went over there to show them how to build it when they started, or how to operate them or something when this conflict started over there. And Roy Archer said, I slipped out one night, got me on an airplane, I got back to Switzerland.
Mm.
Home. He said, I let them have it.
That was in Iran, you say?
Tehran, I guess.
It's Iran,
yeah. I wonder if later in Vietnam and during the war, if any of our military people came across a real truck somewhere, if they were on the Ho Chi Minh Trail at one point.
They must have still
been
there.
Imagine there are real trucks over there in Vietnam.
Wouldn't that be something to come around the bend and see an
American truck?
It was built right-hand drives. It was built right-hand drives. People,
right-hand drives for the roads, because they drive on the right-hand side of the road.
That was something else. We built right-hand drive trucks up there. And the right-hand fender would get wrecked about three times when you got it.
Oh, really?
They got in and they couldn't drive them. They were turning off the direction, and they were posts every 20 feet in that way, and they would hit them posts. And they turned like this, keep on going.
This is the test drivers.
No, just anybody.
Anybody.
The mechanics
from
wanted
to
move on ahead or
something. Oh, in the shop.
In the shop.
Isn't that funny? So salvage had a lot of fenders to fix.
They had three fenders on one truck, getting it maybe from 80 feet down their line. Everybody went and they turned it the wrong way because it was a left hand side, you know.
Oh, that's neat. That's interesting. Boy, I bet I'd have problems.
I'm curious. Was this Lorraine?
Snubberall?
That's Muriel. Muriel. Muriel Snubberall. I had a had to think for a long time. One hider.
Now, where's your picture?
She's been hid there for a long time. I didn't know she was even in there.
Did she work at Rio?
No.
Yeah, she worked at Rio one time, but I was not when I worked there.
No. Oh, that's
right.
A
little book on the current operation of the Rio.
The diesel engine.
Wow.
We've got a volunteer at the museum. His name is Jack Down, and he worked at Rio at one point. And he's been to the Harrisburg plant. They gave him a tour. He went because he loves the trucks, and he was interested. So he went right to the office, and they said, sure, we'll give you a tour.
So he's been in the plant there, and he has seen the trucks that they build.
And we've been down to Spartan Motors in Charlotte. We had a tour down there to see the fire engines that they make.
That was interesting.
There's two different letterheads.
Oh, yeah.
Two different letterheads.
Okay. Oh, my goodness. Diamond Rio.
Did the production change a lot when you were there for safety reasons at all? Because I've been reading a little bit about
safety
that on my
reasons,
own.
We didn't have any safety reasons.
No, there wasn't. Shirley's interested in safety, too, actually.
Yeah, I've been wondering what the conditions, working conditions were.
They were bad. They were bad. I used to go in there. I used to go in there Monday morning in the summertime, and I'd have to stick my head in the door. I walk in about 10 feet and I take a few whiffs of air and then back out
in.
And to get stuffed up. And by the weekend, I'd be spitting up big old gobs of black diesel smoke and stuff.
Because the air was full of diesel fumes and no exhaust?
No, well, it had none, but they had no exhaust. We got OSHA in there one time and they put, this is no kidding, they put these little machines in there to like breathing, you know. They put them on different locations in the shop.
You were supposed to use that on your own self?
No.
Nope.
They was to take the quality, they took and check the quality of the air.
Oh.
And Donnie Alberts took a truck when we were down there, well, and there was one of them sitting right here on a bench about the height of the exhaust. And Donnie Alberts, a little wary, good for nothing more or less, he got one of them trucks and set it in front of this analyzer and let it run for about 10 minutes. Blew on the exhaust right into the thing. And that was the most perfect one in the bunch. And this is gas exhaust.
So those weren't very good gauges.
And I wish I knew nothing about it.
So nothing really changed. You still had to work with all the fumes in your department. Did that ever make anybody sick? Or cause them respiratory problems,
I
never, you think?
I don't know. I was used to heave up, just spit up this stuff all the time. And one night when Vance Disbro, he was a supervisor.
Disbro?
Yeah, he was a hell in the shop and out on the street. He was the best man you ever talked to.
Mm.
But I was in there one night working. I worked 14 hours that day, I guess, trying to get some trucks out. And what heating system was is a big round pipe, and it would blow air down. Well, there was a pipe over here, and if I come here, on this big tube. And a guy over on this bay here had a truck, a diesel truck with a stack that stuck up almost into this heating tube. And Vance wanted him to run that truck in there long enough to make the heat gauge register to work a pair of air shutters. And I was over here in the bay behind that. And I got so nauseated that I went over and shut the truck off. The guy started it back up. I went back over and shut it off again. And he started it back up. And they wanted this truck that I was working on, getting the wiring done on that, or finished up something. So I goes back over, I shut the thing off, and I pull the keys out. Well, this guy runs to Vance Disbro, and he could demonstrate, chew me out about shutting down. I said, Disbro says, that stuff won't hurt you, that's diesel smoke. And I says, Vance, I says, I got my 8 hours in. I says, I'm trying to help you get some trucks out of here, but I got my 8 hours in a long time ago. I said, you know what I can do? I can go home. I picked up my lunch bucket and I went home, and I was sick for about 2 days of that stuff. This was on a Friday night. This was Saturday morning almost.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I can go home. And that made me mad. I went home. I couldn't take no more of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew for myself that he could run that truck in there all night long, and it wouldn't do. But if you take it out on the road and work it for 2 miles, the heat gauge would go up.
So they could have done all that out on the road.
They didn't have to do it.
And not taking a chance with someone's help.
Don't take it out on the road. I told them, don't take it out on the street.
Why wouldn't they do that?
He's just stubborn.
Stubborn.
He was a supervisor.
Oh, and he's not going to have someone else tell him.
Oh, just a little peon. He's a supervisor.
You mentioned that you cut your finger in the reel. Was that in your department? Was that because of safety?
That was in the time when we started. That was before we had these fail-safe safety brakes. When they engineered up a outfit, like a hand brake, like an emergency brake, and they run off of bell cranks and cables and stuff, and on their back slack adjuster, they welded an arm on it, and they put a long slip clevis on it. Well, you could get a hold of that arm and see how much slack it was in your brake shoes. And they put me on that. They had two trucks, and they put me on that, and I got one and got it working. Well, they put another guy on the other one, and Novolsky wanted me to check it out. So I stuck my hand down there to get hold of this back slack adjuster to see how much slack it was in it, because you didn't get too much on your hand lever. Mm-hmm. And Buck Bellin, I guess his name is Rowland, or they call him Buck Bellin, he'd worked on it, and Novolsky said, get in there, and he hit, and I reached down like this. Buck hit them air brakes, and I had to, I just lost the tip of my finger like that. I reached down there and I got by that slop, and the washer cut my finger off. Well, I just lost just the tip of it, but they cut it off three times after that. And that was a day when I shouldn't have been there. Where I was the day I was supposed to go on vacation.
Oh, gosh.
And they taught me into coming in that Saturday to get out some trucks.
Did the Rio, the company, pay for that when you had to go out
and sell everything? Comp, I got,
you got workman's comp.
I got workman's comp out of it, and I got $1,900 for it. I'd give them back that much if I had my finger back.
No, right.
But I never
they didn't
lost.
Pad the end of it like
I never,
they should.
I never lost.
It just, the leaders will stand out there, you know. And every time you touch a thing, it just about, oh,
Dr. DeVries is the one that done it.
So he had to cut it off a little bit more and pad it.
Dr. DeVries done it. And that day, he was so drunk that he couldn't stand up for me.
Really?
He was a doper. He was a shop doctor. He's the one that heard.
Yeah.
That's when he heard me.
He did, would do the physicals.
Yeah.
And did he have an office downtown in Lansing or at the shop?
Yeah, he had an office. He had, Arthur Pappin was his nurse at the shop. She done sugar tests and all this down there. But he had to go down there. You had to go down there. He's on the corner of Capitol and, I think it's Capitol and Kalamazoo or somewhere down there.
Mm-hmm.
Down in there, where his office was at that time. He's the one that used to give all the Capital City Airport pilots their examination too.
And he was not
he was
trustworthy. Is the word I'm looking here for?
Reliable.
Thank you.
He was a doctor.
He was a doctor, but he wasn't apparently very good.
But if you wanted to get in, I went down to Rio for examination. They sent me down there to him. And I walked in there, and he checked me for hernia, and I was breathing. And he says, you're hired.
That was your physical to get hired into the Rio in 1951. So it wasn't very thorough.
I've got a broken back, and they never checked it. My back's been broken, and I worked there all these years with a broken back. It's still broken. I got a vertebrae that's just like that.
And you had that when you went for your physical, and he never even checked?
Yeah. If I'd have been smart, I'd been like Walt Green down and a couple other guys that hurt their back. One guy, Walt Green, I think got $60,000 out of Rio for a bad back.
Because it was an injury related to the job?
Yeah, well they found it after, anyway, he had it before he left.
Yeah, before he left.
Another guy got $30,000 for the same reason. And this Buck Bellin that cut my finger off, he twisted his ankle. I just found out here a few years ago that he got, I guess, $25,000 for hurting his ankle. And I never even knew he hurt his ankle, but it's just that you got to be greedy. I mean, it's greed.
How did they decide that your finger was worth $1,900? Was that just to pay your doctor bills on it, or?
No, that's what workman's comp. They paid all the bills.
I see. But you didn't receive anything in cash for your pain?
No,
or?
I got a check every week for workman's comp.
Mm.
I never missed a day's work. The guys get mad at me because I get boss give me two checks, one for my finger and one for the
finger. Oh, you kept working while it was
there. I never missed a day's work.
Yeah. How did you keep greasing things out of that injury?
Well, Mrs. Pappin up there, she, Mr. DeVries charged every time she wrote down, he'd build a company every day. I can go up there 3 times a day and get it changed.
Up to first aid.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You mentioned you were on your way for vacation when this happened. Yeah. Well, how much vacation did the company give you when you were working there?
You didn't get paid, I don't think, at that time.
Unpaid vacation.
Unpaid, you get a couple of weeks off. A
couple of weeks.
But talking about vacations, you know, here is a statement where I was supposed to get $640 the last year I worked there as a vacation bonus.
Right.
Okay, they paid me something and left a balance of $490.89.
Mm-hmm.
Well, about 6 weeks ago, I got a check from Diamond Reel.
A few weeks ago?
Yeah.
This is like, what, 17 years later or something?
Yeah, I got a check.
15 years later.
I got a check for this, and I got 18% of that, which was about, run figures, $90. Federal government took out $17. State income took out so much. FIC took out so much. And then they took out so much for Social Security or something, which mm-hmm. I never paid before in my life. And when I got this $490, what I got left of it was $60.
Mm-hmm. Right, and this is $490 in 1974,
yeah.
Which is a lot
That's
more
what
now.
That's what I was thinking. but they taxed you at today's rate, even though this was income earned 17 years ago when the tax rate was lower. That doesn't seem right, does
No,
it?
Sure doesn't.
But now, to get this money back, I got to go next year and file out long-term federal and state, and then I can get that money back. But they sent me.
Oh, you can declare it as a loss.
I can get that back because I haven't got enough income. You see, I can get all that back except the FIC and the Social Security or something.
Oh, I see.
I can get the income
taxes
back.
Yeah.
This is interesting.
But I got to wait another year to get that, see?
Mm. Mm. That's interesting. I've never seen anything like this before that was from the bankruptcy hearing.
Mm-hmm. You want to show us something else? Go ahead, because I have
a question. I don't know. This is the only thing that Governor Ford didn't force, I guess.
Gerald Ford.
Mm. I had to send in my marriage license. That's what that was for. To get here's the letter that this is what Ford got for us. He got this guaranteed pension benefit guarantee. And until we get our pension, I lost 2 years on that, but. I get $125 a month now out of that,
mm-hmm.
and I got it fixed so if I pass on, she can get it on this. I could have got more by taking this for me.
Right, we've heard about that. That's right. You made a special deal or something.
Yeah.
We know some people who've done that. Yeah.
But I had to send in our marriage license and all that stuff there to make sure that
everything was all the records were legal.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation, Washington, D.C. Somebody we interviewed recently had just gotten the letter. Must be maybe about the time you got something, remember?
Yeah.
And he had said that, I think the letter said that he would be getting a small amount, $70 or something.
What's my boy doing out there? This is one of my, more or less, my last paychecks.
Mm.
Well, you see how many. For a 40-hour check, how much I made for 40 hours.
That's what the people make nowadays in one day.
$5.
Isn't that incredible? And some of them are doing this
for a week.
Sweeping the floor or whatever.
Yeah, well, I put $3 to credit union, but this is what I bought. I'd have better got about home $183 if I hadn't put it in the credit union.
Will this be running out at some point, this pension benefit guarantee? Are they going to come to a certain point where they've got everything settled and then they're going to dissolve? Or will, I wonder if
no,
someone will
that's,
or not
this
or not
is
or not.
A government agency.
Yes.
Olds and real, all of them has pay into that. That's a government operation.
Oh, that's right. So it'll continue.
When Capert took off, when he went bankrupt that place, he took $6 million of our pension fund.
Right.
And I hear they finally caught up with him, and they made him pay that $6 million into this pension fund.
Yeah.
I see, and that's where this money is coming from.
Yeah, this is our pension.
From him having to pay it back.
But I had lacking from October to November the 6th. So I'm having exactly 25 years in there. And Capert never paid no pension for 4 years for what is there. So they went at it and cut me back a 20 years pension. So that's why I don't get as much pension as I should have got. But I heard something about this here deal here. They're going to try to make them take up for what. For that stuff,
that
I don't know if it ever will go or not. But
I guess that was my question. When this corporation, this pension benefit guarantee corporation, when they feel that they have given out all the money fairly to all the people who lost, then will they close the case on Rio? Or that's what I'm.
Everybody, wondering. I guess any company, anybody gets it. It's a government. It's same as.
So it won't be closed.
Something like Social Security.
For yeah. Other places. But
other places, they all get it. You'll get it as long as you live.
I see.
And other than that, I guess you get it as long as it's available, as long as you're available. Mm-hmm. But
I have a couple of other, they're a little off of this topic, different questions. First, we've heard from a lot of workers in the plant that the company had to shut down because of hunting season.
No.
Or let me put it another way. They had to let people go for hunting season.
They let people go for hunting season.
Right. They couldn't hold it against them because so many people in the plant went, you know, like whether they wanted to or not.
Most of them took their vacation.
During hunting season.
Had their vacation at that time.
Right.
It did make it kind of rough at times when you take
so many
15,
take off,
20 people out of one department, but they never shut the plant down for hunting.
Okay.
I know, because I don't hunt. I never miss a day of work during hunting season.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe the first day of pheasant season, there wouldn't be too many
people there.
Here they're lying. They wouldn't make production them days, that day, but...
Because we've heard that from people that used to go hunting, and the supervisors, the foreman would say, we don't want you to go, we need you on the line, but it didn't make any difference because they would go anyway, they knew they wouldn't get fired.
Yeah, they
couldn't fire. Because there were so many people that used to do that, they couldn't fire everybody who did it.
Well, they used to stick me once in a while on the assembly line. I can't work assembly line. The assembly line, I stand still. I stand here to go to work on something. The building moved. The building moved. They put me in, last time I worked on a line, they put me and a guy named Walker from St. John's on a line doing one man's job that wasn't in. Maybe it was a hunting season day, I don't know. They put two of us on a line putting on military fenders. And there was three bolts in the front and four in the back, and a wire to run through it. Two of us couldn't keep up that. They run three militaries and one commercial. Two of us couldn't do that one man's job. He was doing both sides.
Mm.
We couldn't do one side. And that night, I went back, Lord Erden, and I turned in my time, and I walked to my boss, and he says to him, I just walked up to him, I says, you ever put me on that line again, that'll be the last day I'll work. I'll turn around and punch out. And the supervisor stood right there. I said, if I don't want to hire it in on the line, I don't want a motor plant line, on a motor line. So I can't work on lines. And if you ever put me there again, I will never, you will never have me worry about me working there.
What was his response?
Huh?
What did he say to you?
He looked at me kind of screwy, and I said, that's
right.
No kidding. I told him what I meant. I said, I mean it. And I said, there will be no more of that for me. Mm-hmm. And I never worked on the line from that day on.
And it sounds like you were valuable in the wiring, what you were doing. Mm-hmm. They really wanted you there, so they were going to fool around.
I was not only valuable in wiring, I was valuable in any job that they put me on. They used to
If it took him all day, he did it right.
They
the job is right done.
Well, I done it right. I done it right, and I made every move count.
Mm-hmm.
They had
still that way.
They had they had time study on the guy that pulled me, went in there and put on front turn signals. You had to put a handle, a switch handle on the handle, and wire it down to, and drill holes in the fender, make your own harness, and run your lights up and make them work. It was time studied out, so if you put on one front and rear, and now it time studied out to be about 7 hours and maybe 30 minutes, 7 hours and a half. And my boss used to make my time slip fall over, and he'd put that down as day rate. That's what I was doing.
Mm-hmm. So one a day.
I was turning in maybe 6 and 7 jobs a day, and he was making my time over and giving me one front and rear and half hour heavy repair.
Wow.
I was making a whole $14 a day. And he screwed up one day somehow. The timekeeper come to me and says, well, I can't okay this slip. He says, they got you down, you got charged them up for $19. And you got too much work down here. I said, let me see them time slips. And I flipped them over like that, and every one of them was in the same handwriting. And there was Roland Bellin, another guy, had the same identical time slips as I had, because I'd turn in 6 jobs a day, and I only supposed to turn in 2. But, as I was going to tell you, this 4-hour job of putting these front turn signals on, I put a good many of them on in 30 minutes, 30 minutes flat. And this other guy that was done it before me was getting 3.5-4 hours.
So I bet you probably wished you were on piece rate instead, huh?
They wouldn't give me piece rate.
Did anybody work on piece rate? Any?
They did on the assembly line for a while. But I never worked on piecework. I worked
hourly
all the time.
Yeah.
And I got up, I think it's $5 a nickel an hour when I last day I worked there.
Well, that's what you were making. I was going to ask you if you remembered what you were making on your...
I just showed her that check stub here for long or the last. I didn't know if you see it or not. I have a check here. That's 40-hour paycheck.
So I don't make very much.
June 15th.
Oh, this is your net pay for the week?
Yeah, well, I took $30.
That's why he dropped. Why he brought home
after they taken up the deductions in your credit union.
Yeah.
Two something, I believe.
I thought I got $183, I think.
$280. But you could buy more with $153 take home pay.
I used to go down to the AP store with a $10 bill, and I couldn't carry them out in 2 trips, hardly.
Yeah.
That's right.
And this, I noticed,
I remember that.
Absent call number.
And it gets the phone number. Carried on one paper sack, and that's only half full.
I notice here on your pay statement, it says absent call number 485-2249. In other words, if you were ill and you couldn't come to work, you had to call in this number, but they put it right on your pay stub.
You had to call that in, or they'd raise it over with you.
Yeah, but it's right on your pay stub, so you don't forget.
Yep.
Let's see, that's interesting. Yeah. You mentioned... before we started taping, you were talking about something about heat treat and fabrication, and I jotted that down. I thought I'd ask you later what you meant by that.
Well, I can't tell you the names of these foremen, but some of these foremen that broke this off are some from Diamond T and Diamond or Diamond Rear or White or some other foremen and supervision come in from other companies, and they had this all set up. I don't know why they done it, but they talked somebody into taking it out of the shop. They took the old equipment right out of the shop and put it somewhere else, and they run it, and then they charge the company back, and they still work there on supervision or in their front office. And I can almost think of the guy's name that took this fabrication out to Grand Ledge. a welding shop and made these gas tank brackets and stuff, fabricated gas tank brackets. And then, I can't think of who started Truck and Trailer, but he came in there one day and I showed him how to put a fifth wheel.
DK?
Huh?
Was it DK Truck?
D&K Truck was one of our dealers.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I'm getting confused.
But Truck and Trailer was the guy worked in the shop there. He was one of the guys from Diamond T or someplace. So he took their, they broke up special equipment. Everything is special equipment. And when turn signals got mandatory, they put them on the line. Mm. But West Coast mirrors, I've engineered on that West Coast, all that stuff like that when it was first come out. But this Truck and Trailer guy went out on his own and tried to sell them, he took the truck out of here and take it over to his place, put a fifth wheel on and bring it back. And our inspector wouldn't sell them by them because they went at it and ratted the holes out and this and that. So the guy came back from Truck and Trailer and had me show him how to put a fifth wheel on it. They told me to show him how. Well, that's the last one I had to show.
Mm.
And Truck and Trailer took that off. But that spinoff and chrome, I think Chrome Plating, there's some chrome plating company in Lansing. They used to chrome plate exhaust pipes and chrome door handles and grab handles and all that. That was was taken out of there. They used to chrome it all right there in the reel.
Oh, so these all were spin-offs and started new companies.
Yeah.
Where someone from within the company would start their own business
started
somewhere.
Started their own business out there and still worked.
Isn't that little illegal?
And turned around, they turned around and sold it back to the reel.
Oh, wow.
And they sold this all back to reel.
This was all in, say, the latter days, say, the last 2 or 3 years of the...
That was all in, say, from... I don't know, maybe 60, maybe not 60, about maybe 68, 69, 70.
Yeah, so the last
in the last 4 or 5 years,
yeah.
So to speak.
Yeah.
Huh. Okay.
That was all spun off. That was, we didn't do no more, see?
Mm-hmm.
Heat treat, I think Lansing Heat Treat, and Truck and Trailer, and I can't think of that fabricator company in Grand Ledge, and Chrome Plating, that one out. Now, I've seen them, I've been over there, as you say, I knew the whole thing.
Right, the operation.
I knew where the shooting galley was up there. They had a shooting galley up there in the real one. You just go up there and shoot rifles.
Oh, really? Where was that?
They were up on the third floor, lovely offices.
Oh, in the administration building?
Yeah.
There was a shooting gallery.
Yeah, back behind them. Well, there was a shooting galley in there.
For everybody
well,
who wanted to?
Well, supervision, I guess, more or less.
Certain ones, probably.
They had a big, thick, thick concrete wall up there, and it was just lit.
I would hope so.
It was, yeah. It had a shooting gallery in there. I used to have all kinds of things. The clubhouse should never have been torn out. That was a good building, and that was not, actually, it was not real. That belonged to the real employees. Their real clubhouse. They used to have that back years ago. They had, you worked there, they had movies, they had dances, mm-hmm. and stuff like this for the working people's kids. No. And that was spotless. I mean, even.
It was spotless.
Yep. Oh, hey, living in Waterville.
Yes, we talked to him a couple of weeks ago, and we're going to go back this spring.
Yeah.
He has a lot of things to show us that are in his garage that he said come back in the uh-huh. spring.
I would have got more. I got a banner. I don't know if she's got it somewhere. I got a big banner that she bought at the garage sale, a big old Raymond Real banner.
Oh, mm-hmm. really?
From him?
Come from the...
You were from a garage sale or something.
Yeah.
Oh, some other garage sale. Yeah. Do you used to go to the clubhouse a lot? Yourself with your family?
Well, not too much. We used to have meetings there. I used to belong to this... we had a little stores in the shop. It was Real Benefit Association. I wound up there. Me and Bernie Wilkie was the president, and I wound up as vice president. And
you were the vice president of the Cathedral of the Benefit Association.
And it lasted. Bernie Wolf was the president.
Been law for a long time.
And we are the one that divided up the money and stuff when they went down.
That was already in the Benefit Association to the employees who had contributed to it?
Yeah, this like this thing here, right there.
See that
40 cents?
They
took out of our check.
I can't remember, he's selling a dollar a piece or something.
We went to Real Benefit. Yeah, we had these stores in there. They were supposed to be making money, but they were guys in there that stuck the first 20 bucks in their pocket every morning.
They
had a coffee and donuts and cigars and cigarettes.
Oh, so they were like canteens.
Like canteens
where they would sell things and the profits would go to the Benefit Association?
Of course, it's going to Benefit.
Okay.
But a lot of people...
They pocketed it.
They pocketed the first 20 bucks. And that's why somebody taught me into getting into it. Well, we used to have maybe, I don't know, I think we had $60,000 in there at one time.
Mm-hmm.
And it got down, when I went in there, I think it was down to $10,000. This money vanished. When you was off work, if you was sick or something like that, they would pay you, if you was off a week or 2 weeks, the Real Benefit would give you the family $75. That was for whatever once a year.
Mm-hmm.
They'd give you $75. And but this Real, taking out money every week out of their pay, and this went from, I don't know how much it was. It was an enormous amount of money. It went down to nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And I got in there, I was in there vice president for about a year and a half before it went down. I think we got it back to under $20,000 by me being in there. I mean, this little boy didn't eat dinner with the rest of them. I eat dinner with all of them.
Mm-hmm.
I was here, I was there, and I worked in the store. And I knew what was going on. I could tell a pile of money over here that had $50 into it, and when the guy checked it out, he put down 30. See?
Mm-hmm.
That was done. About every store had four. We had four stores. It was about $40 a day that was
missing.
But I was.
So you had the meetings for this Benefit Association over at the clubhouse.
Yeah, we had them at the clubhouse.
Mm-hmm.
And we had an office in the bottom of the clubhouse one time.
Oh, mm-hmm. You did.
Did you go down to the clubhouse?
I was in there one time.
For a dance or a Christmas party or something.
No, just.
We went there for our meeting. We went to that meeting.
The one the meetings
they
had,
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But why they wanted me in there for vice president? They wanted me to be president of it. If I'd have been president of it, I didn't think I could cut that much at the first. I was going to be a vice president, get my foot in the door, and then I would have been a president. But the place went down. But if I got in there 10 years earlier, we probably would have had $100,000 in there, but it went down to practically nothing.
Mm.
Because people, there's a little antique, it's the Real Employees Credit Union, which I belong to.
Oh, where was that located?
You had a credit union too.
Huh, I didn't know that. Where was that located?
That was right in the Real itself.
In the building itself?
When they started it, and then the
And this shows the family and even the dog, I think, under an umbrella, the Real umbrella. Interesting.
Never seen one of those. They went from that to, it's Mail Clippers, what they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then they went from
that. They had something else, too, that day, didn't they?
I don't know what it was, but you turn that around and you flip that over and you got a Mail Clipper.
Mm-hmm.
Then they incorporated with Co-op over on... Logan and South and Jolly, there on Logan.
What was that?
Co-op Credit Union. They went from this to Co-op Credit Union.
Oh.
And then now we're in Autobody. Went into Autobody.
So now you're in Autobody Credit Union.
We're in Autobody Credit Union now. But there's a little thing there, there's another package.
Yeah, so that really, someday that'll be worth something. I wanted to go back a few years and did. Anybody in your family ever worked for Rio, or uncles or grandpas?
Well, my brother worked was working at Reel when I got a job there. But he'd worked at Fisher Body, was it 2 years or 5 years? And then he worked at Reel for a couple of years. And a little while after I got to work there, he got mad and quit and went back to Fisher. But he worked upstairs for little Nelson Hunger building military hoods. He built military hoods and fixed them up for the trucks. That's all he done up there. Mm-hmm.
What do you mean?
He didn't like, yeah, I was going to ask that.
He didn't like the Reel.
He didn't like Reel?
Didn't like the way things were run? Or?
We didn't like the way it was run, I guess, and they didn't like the boss. He worked piecework, and he'd bunch them up, and he'd get some worked ahead, and then service would want some, make them up and seal his stockpile. And
he wouldn't make as much then.
He didn't get paid for them, see?
And no one would change that system.
Yeah.
And so that made him angry.
Did you originally apply there because your brother was there?
No. A guy by the name of Guy Blanchard. Now, I talked to Guy Blanchard about having this meeting with you people, and he says, I didn't want him over there. He says, I was going to bring him over there, tell him where you live. He says, I won't tell him a damn thing.
Mm.
But he worked down the line. He just lived right down the road here, and I've known him since I was about knee high. And he went to work here in February. And I guess they asked him if he knew anybody that needed a job that was reliable and all this and that. And he used to stop here about once every week or two. Go up to Reel and put in the application and get a job up there. Go to work. I was out here jumping cars, which I've done most of my life, and repairing cars and hauling junk. Well, the day I hired in at Reel, I had an old 37 Ford, and I still got the trailer out here, and I had a bunch of old greasy Ford motors. I hadn't shaved for, I guess, a week and a half. I hadn't changed my clothes, I guess, in a week and a half. And my hands was as black as your sweater, and my face was pretty much black. I had went to Berkey's or Freeland's or somewhere in Lansing and dumped these motors. And on the way back, I said, just for the hell of it, I'm going to stop at Reel and put in my application. And I was actually ashamed of myself.
Oh.
That's when I walked in there and put my name and address on this sacky. And I said, hell, I don't know, I work in this greasy old place. And here I was, worse than anybody was there. 50 people in this Baker Street lobby. And old Jerry Burns, before I got from this corner over to this corner like this, through all the people, Jerry Burns called my name and called me in there. Oh, my God. Look at me.
That's probably why they picked you. They probably figured you knew something about motors.
When I come out of that room, when I interview with him, about 50 shot of ice bore holes right through me because you hurt me. God, I didn't know whether I had any clean toes to home or not. So he said, you get back here at 1 o'clock for an interview or examination. So I stopped at the store and bought me a clean pair of shirt and pants, come home and shaved, washed my hands, and I was back up there.
He was doing a laundry for the wash tubs then.
God, he
the wash
hired board. Me, and all that.
That's where you first got married.
Mm-hmm. And were you in this house then, or you were in a different
building? This.
You were building it. And you had to wash your laundry in the old wash tub.
We lived in this house 4 years without any electricity. We didn't even put electricity up
here. They helped wire it. We had
I done all the wiring, all the carpet work, all the layout.
Wow.
And that was, you were married, what, in the late 40s?
46 we got married.
Yeah.
And
so from 46 to the early 50s, there wasn't any electricity here?
Well, there was line down to here.
But not
but
to the
during
houses.
During the war, there wasn't enough transformers or wire or something.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And they had a line down to here. But they put the line through here in the 40s, I think.
Before the war started?
But just before the war. But then they didn't have any other power through here. And what tickled me one day, a guy came out from Lansing, a Mason, Consumers Power, I think it was. Someone appliances, electric stoves and refrigerators and all this and that. And I let him stand there and tell me all this stuff, you know. And I said, boy, you got a good product here and everything. I don't know how I'm going to make juice jump from that line over here to get in their stalls to get to work. And he looked at me, and like I'm a man, people are going let me tell you all that.
Yeah. You know? Well, give him practice with his lingo. His pitch, yeah.
He's a pot belly stove in the front room.
We built the house a little bit of time.
Wooden coal cook stove.
You did a good job.
Added on to it.
We still got the kerosene lamp.
A little money, do a little more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Kerosene lamp, you had the clean lamps and everything. Oh my
gosh. Mm-hmm. I got pictures of when we had it was
all cement block.
You couldn't get the cinder. We wanted the cinder block. We couldn't get cinder block back then. We got the cement block. It was a block house. We still got some of the wall in here.
I built this room out here for a washroom. This is the third kitchen I built in this house. I built this one for a washroom. Then I had to build a garage out there. Then I had to build a breezeway to the garage. Man, I don't know. It's been rough. Been a rough life, but we made it this far. I've had open heart.
There's four kids here.
I had open heart surgery and I just had coronary operation there about 6 weeks ago.
Oh, I see that now.
Hemorrhoids and
gallbladder.
Uh-huh. And you were able to it was hard going, but you were able to support them and raise them and everything, working all the time at the rehab.
She's never worked. After our first kid was born, she had never worked.
Never
worked
well.
I worked for a year before we had our first child at Fisher Body.
Oh, you did?
Oh, you did? What did you do there?
On the line. He said he could work on the line. I worked on moving line.
Uh-huh.
I worked Fisher Body 6 weeks, and I couldn't take it. That darn line, that building, keep moving on, keep falling down.
I think I'd be like that, too.
What were you making?
We worked on the convertibles, and we had put the cylinders that raised up the top. We had put rubbers underneath the windows. We had to cut them. Rubber strips this wide. There's two girls, one on one side and one on the other side. I did one side, she did one side. And I put the cylinders in for one side, and she put them in off one side.
That time they used hydraulic cylinders.
The line was moving all that time. And you had to put those rubber things in there. Push them in there. They had to be cut so long.
Mm.
And then I had to put the strips on the doors.
Door seals.
That door seal.
Keep the moisture out.
Uh-huh.
This was in the 40s?
Punch a hole in there and put a screw on top of that.
And you did that while this thing is going on.
It was moving. Mm-hmm.
You don't dare let one go by without
well,
you. When was that?
This was in the 40s?
In 46, 47.
So was after the war already?
47.
47.
Yeah, my daughter's born in 48. Yeah.
When did you folks get married?
46.
But then after that, you didn't have to go back into the shop
at
all.
Your job's home now.
And you had a lot to do with four kids.
I didn't work at that.
We spun them out pretty good. We had 2 years long in the first, then we had 6 years between one,
and
7 years
between the other.
The youngest one's out there in the garage. He's 29 years old.
And he likes mechanics.
So I said, if we wait another 8 years for the next one, if we space them out like that, I'll be too old. I don't have any more.
Has either one of your two boys ever worked in the shops because of your experience in the shop?
No, my boys, I tried to get my oldest boy in the reel and they wouldn't put him in because just before that, they had a CPA, MPC, or whatever you want to call it, the National Colored People Association.
Oh, NAACP.
We didn't have enough colored people in the reel, so the MPC made them hire some.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know why, but they bus 50 colored people out of Jackson. They're on a bus, come in there every morning. 50 black ones come in there every Monday, every day from Jackson. Within 6 weeks' time, I don't think there was only two of them left. Every one of them would come in there and work a day or two, and they hurt his back. Every one of them went out there on workman's compensation. And after that, if you've had a slightest back trouble, you didn't get in the reel. Well, my boy has got a bad back, and he couldn't get in the reel. I couldn't get him in there no way. Even Dr. DeRays wouldn't even put him in there.
Do you remember when that happened with the NAACP, what year around when that was?
I don't know. It must have been in the 60s sometime.
Okay.
But back in, I bought a new 53 city car in January of 53. And that was a bad thing to do. I bought it.
It was a lemon. Yeah.
And there was a lemon besides. And I got laid off going in November or something. I got laid off 7 times in 2 years. I would, they was running, that was before, I think Heaney Ambulance Company bought us out. But I would work 2 weeks. And they laid me off for about 2 weeks. Well, when I go back there, they have a bunch of trucks all bent up there that nobody else worked on, or they couldn't work on, or didn't want to work on them. We like special equipment stuff. I'd work my butt off and get them trucks all done, and then they'd lay me off for a couple more weeks. Mm-hmm. And I was laying old Harry McDowell, he's dead and gone now, but he says, I told him I look up. He was a painter. He said, I look up. I says, I didn't see you going that way or this way.
In or out of the shop. So they weren't pacing the work very smart, were they?
I wouldn't stick with them. I stuck with them.
Could you see that the end was coming the last couple of years?
Yeah, I could see it was coming. Because when you got Capert bringing, or truckers bringing stuff in, and loading it from this truck on that truck, and that truck going back out the door. And we were running them load of engines, I see that one day. We was running engines off the line, or trucks off the line, but no engines. We used to put in engines, have to set engines over there on repair floor. I've seen the engines come in on this truck and go on that one, and our line is running empty. Like I seen him pick up this, have a fork truck pick up this axle one day. That went. Got to go to the warehouse for stock or something.
That's what the reason was given?
That's what he said. I stood there and talked to him. I stood and talked to Capert like I'm talking with you. I was more a bit afraid of him than I was the devil. I was standing there one day and he came up beside me and he said, what are you doing? He says, I'm standing here. What are you standing there for? I says, the boss told me to. I said, he told me to wait for that truck to get off the line. And I was taking I call them a doodle bug deal, tractor deal. We'll take a hook of chain to them and pull them off the line. They didn't have no motors in them. We pull them off, and I was doing right on that for a while. They put me on the line pulling trucks off the line with no motors in.
What happens to those trucks with no motors, and what did they go after you pull them off the line?
Stuck them out in a lot. And I stay out there for 3 months before we get a motor for them. But I got another, I don't know, I thought I had it. I got a money from the bankrupt company. Bankrupt court, and I wonder if you believe this or not. It's hard to read. But here is what Lloyd Kemp, trustee, got from that bankrupt company.
Trustee got $181,000.
The company sold for $16 million. The Capert bought it for $16 million.
That's what he paid for it, $16
million.
Okay.
But now, there's even foreman's names in there where they got back pay on it. And now after, they're supposed to burnt the papers. According to this, they're no more real. They burnt
reports on it.
They burnt the papers.
Did all the employees get one of these?
Yeah,
did
all the ones. Yeah, I think they all did.
Had.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I was just curious.
But you look in there in one place, there's a... I don't know. I can read some of them. Let her look at them. That's what Kemp. He's the guy that signed that check that I got. Kemp. He signed that check.
United States
they
bank
got
support
that.
For the Western District
I didn't
District
even get my vacation paid, but they, look what they got.
$181,000. Case number, notice of filing of final account.
I'm trying to push that card.
Final account of the trustee
yeah,
in this case has been filed.
It ain't that hard to push in, I guess, but...
Someone's out there with
it. This is interesting. The accounts of the trustee show total receipts of $56,139,296,000.
That's for the whole, including all the companies. They have a whole big list of companies for the pension.
Total disbursements of balance on hand is...
There he's getting it in.
The following is a summary of fee applications which have been filed along with interim payments made to professionals and other outstanding administrative claims. So this is everybody that had a claim or had anything coming.
Everybody's had a claim on there is on there.
Well, look at all the attorneys.
It's a fine print. I can hardly read it. But now you take Cummings Engine Diesel, Detroit Diesel, and some of this more or less alphabetically. And you can see where they got $6 million worth of bills they put in there, I think it is. But the lawyers got it all.
Yeah.
We also had to pay some chemical company. Used to come in and get the paint sludge and stuff and took it down to Utica, down on about 23 Marble, where my boy used to live, and put it in a dump. And they turned around and charged the bankrupt company, I think it was $126 million, to help clean up that dump. And when they put this paint factory in up here, this...
O'Leary Paint.
O'Leary Paint.
On the real ground.
They charged us $60,000 to clean that area up, but they are in there.
Yeah.
Well, that's where the motor plant
used to be. This is the workers' money, but it should have been the company who was paying for it.
And
what they
do with the
stuff? The company policy that did that.
They haul all this stuff down Detroit, pack it in the salt mine down there.
Yeah.
But every truck had to be, I had to stand in there all covered up in suit and everything and wash the tires off when they come out on the street. Why couldn't they have done it a lot different? I could have done it a lot different if they could have done it. But look at me. I worked 25 years in that stuff and didn't kill me. Probably didn't do me any good. But here was a guy standing out there inside the road with a water hose washing these trucks off, all dressed up in the monkey suit so they couldn't get nothing on him. That, the ground, if that ground had been that contaminated, it would have killed most everybody around there.
I noticed that grass and wildflowers and things continued to grow on the old real lot right where the motor motor department was and all the rest of it.
I can tell you something else about where that motor plant was when the railroad tracks was. My mother used to ice skate on that in the wintertime in that area.
Oh, where the tracks went through between the buildings?
Between the two buildings.
Mm. Oh, was that right?
Yeah. My mother used to chum around with Ransom Olds' daughter.
Which one, really? Gladys or Burness?
Gladys, I think it was.
Is that right?
Yeah.
They went to school together?
Yeah, I guess. When they built the real factory out there, they had to cross that little river, Grand River, whatever it is.
The Red Cedar.
They had to build a bridge out there.
Yeah, the Red Cedar.
They had to build a bridge out there. My mother said, they had to build a bridge out there so we could get out there to go to work. But why did he build it out so far out of Lansing? Why did he build so far out of town?
Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
At that time, that was far out of town.
Yeah, they had to build a bridge even to get to it.
Ah, and that was country out there beyond the river. Isn't that amazing? Did your mother ever mention meeting Ariel's or what she thought of Gladys?
She and Gladys went to school together. That's all I can remember her saying.
She never mentioned about going to their house? Or
no. I don't.
Okay.
They tore their house down.
Yes, they sure did.
Carlton Lee Smith, he was a foreman. He got them for $2,400. He got $400 of it. She used to ice skate with them down there on that thing she said.
There was a little pond there someplace where, on the grounds where the reel was later built.
Yeah, where the water would set in there before they put that motor plant. See, that reel was built in sections, just like he built a little building here. That's what we had. We had the apartments, 26 department, different than that. There was different buildings.
Different buildings. They had
different building
to
numbers.
It.
Well, in the middle, this was a big parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
And behind the engineering garage. But it was built in sections, more or less. When they got a little bit bigger, they used to build cars there. And it used to be a tramway over Cedar Street, over in the John Bean Building.
Well, that's right.
Well, I worked in John Bean Building for a while, and they had this tramway shut off.
But, what went across the tram line? What was that used for?
Well, that was they built the bodies, I think. And they just had a tram line through there, and they pushed the bodies over there and put them on the frames over here. And then they come down around, and they had a ramp from the third floor to bring them down on the street. But they went one way or the other. I don't know which way
they were. They started on one side, run across over the highway on this overpass tram line, and down to the other side and finished, and then run off into a parking lot.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It used to be that way.
Yeah, remember when they tore that down. It used to be that.
Yeah, first time I ever got encountered with real, my dad went to town. We went to town with my dad one time, and we took some potatoes, and a friend of his had a market on Cedar Street, but it was up by Saginaw, somewhere up in there. Mm-hmm. And we had a little 28 Chevrolet car, and there wasn't no brakes, and we had about 25 bushel of potatoes on it. And my dad says, we turn off here and go up this side street instead of going up Cedar Street because they got no brakes. First thing you know, we come up to the back gate of Real.
Oh.
Hey, cop said, what are you doing down here?
Oh!
Something in the back out of there. And, but
he said, I'm here to deliver your potatoes.
When I first remember going to Lansing, Green Lawn was the city limits.
That
was back
that's where in the medical is.
Back in 29, about 29 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
The Danville School, had TB going around there. We had to go we had to go up to Ingham Medical. Well, the TB, they call that TB Center, and then we had to go up there. They put us on an old Model T bus. We had an old Model T Ford buses down in Danville. We had to go up there. It took us all day to go up there. Gravel road, that Cedar Street with gravel.
Oh, it was.
Went up to, just this side of Jolly Road.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pavement. But it took us all day to go up there. They put about 15 kids on this bus. This little old Ford bus. We sat there with our knees interlocked together, sideways, facing each other. But we go up there and give us TB tests.
Mm.
I was only about, I was size 6 years old.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
See, I'm a young nipper yet. I'm only 70 years old.
Yeah.
Usually we wait till people tell us. We don't ask.
Yeah, well, I have. A lot of people tell me you don't look that old.
No, you don't.
You really don't. You really don't.
We talked to somebody who was 84 the other day, and I could have sworn she was 64.
Oh, I know. It
64.
Was amazing.
It was amazing.
Oh,
people
are
living longer nowadays.
Yep. Yeah.
They've got companies in here that put in for claims that I never heard of.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I never heard of.
Anybody that thought they had a claim in any way, shape, or form was real applied.
Yeah. They got a company. They got some.
They want the cut out of it.
Yeah, but they sued after they went bankrupt.
Some California bank, Cummings Engine Company, $1,430,844.46.
Hmm.
That's $1 million that they put in for it.
Makes you wonder what they based that on.
Yeah.
What did they do?
Cummings Engine that he brought in and shipped back out. We never had any.
Didn't get paid for.
See, he shipped them out to these other companies. When he got them into these other warehouses, somebody stole them out of, just like somebody stole them from Rio and didn't get shipped or something. There was a lot of double billing. There was guys in the shop. Herzog was a guy named Herzog was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
They would take a purchase order, and some guy in California ordered a truck. And they would build this truck. Well, they'd take the same PO and they would change the name and address, and somebody, maybe New York City, New York, And they would run this truck through again, the same way, double billing. They got caught up with that after a while because somebody wrecked a truck and he wanted some parts for this truck and they had messed up and they sold it. The guy from the other part got it. And they come to find out that somebody in the shop was double billing these trucks, just billing them twice. Mm-hmm. This inner circle inside of the front office was selling them here and pocketing the money, and this guy over here, that was legitimate over here, see? Mm-hmm. That went into the company. Now, Carl Laudenschlager, he's dead and gone.
Is he?
Used to run Cata. He's the one that put Cata bus in service.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Carl Laudenschlager, when I went to work here, had one secretary, and then about a year's time, he had seven secretaries implicating each other's work. Carl Laudenschlager stole more out of Rio than it was worth, probably. He built seven cottages at Houghton Lake with Rio carpenters.
We've heard this from somebody.
Rio electricians.
Yeah.
They would go up there and work on it?
They would punch in on it. They'd punch in on a Saturday morning, and he'd haul them up there, and they'd work all weekend, and they were punched in and out, and they were getting time and a half and double time on weekends building these houses in Houghton Lake, and her cottages, whatever there was. The lumber was coming in to Rio.
Packing cases, lumber or something?
The lumber was loaded on Rio trucks and hauled there. Built to Rio. He also had this pallet factory over by the Paul Revere Bar or someplace back in there on
there. Oh, sure.
Mm-hmm. He was having lumber come in there to build to Rio and load it on the trucks and taking over to this company and pallets made, and he was charged, the company was buying pallets made by Laudenschlager back into the shop.
Unbelievable.
But Carl Laudenschlager, crooked as he was, when he was there, that company made money. And when Diamond T came in there, I think it was, or one company came in there, they fired him. And we went way down. They had to hire the guy back. They hired her back. Mm-hmm. We went back up, but he still was stealing just as much as he was making.
And that's incredible.
And he went
what a movie that would make.
He went at it. He had a steel process. He had a Eaton Stamping Company, I guess, an Eaton Wrap or Diamonddale or something like that. He was a company he had over there in Eaton Rapids.
It's Eaton Rapids, yeah.
Stamping Company. But then after they fired him the second time, he went down to Cata Bus Company. And when Rio went down, half of Rio, right. I could have got in the Claire's circle, what I call his circle, but I'm not that greedy, I'm a damn crook. He even asked me to come in with him to complete the spoke in the wheel, I guess. But
to work
I
for him at Cata?
No, to work for him at Rio.
Oh.
See? Mm-hmm.
So you'd be wiring something he'd be stealing?
No, I'd probably be loading lumber or driving truck or going here or there.
He had his own
wiring in his cottages or something.
Wiring in cottages.
Isn't
something
that incredible?
I wouldn't work for Carol Adams Lawyer. I knew too much for my own good, actually, but I didn't want to go. One of my reasons is being straight, more or less, is this. When I quit school, Cyril Briggs down there told me, he says, I'll give you a year and you'll be in jail. Well, I've never had a pair of handcuffs on me or been in a jail over any more than I had to walk in to see somebody. And that's been 50, 60 years right there that I've been.
You didn't want to compromise yourself.
I've never been arrested, and I've never had nothing but two speeding tickets in my life. And that's one of the reasons why that. As long as Cyril Briggs is alive, he's still alive.
You got to show him, right?
Good thing he said that.
He's down to Danville School. He's down there yet. What tickled me one day, my boy was down there to get his hair cut, and he's sitting there in the barbershop waiting to get his hair cut. My boy was talking to the woman, she was my niece, you know, we were married. And Cheryl spoke up and he says, you talk just like a guy that used to go to school. Well, I used to have my class in school. Says, your name wasn't behind, was it? And he says, John, says, that's my dad. And he says to my boy, he says, you know, he says, he is one of the smartest damn figures. He can figure out. He was even smarter than the teachers I had in school in figures. Mm-hmm. I could figure out anything partner as fast as you could with the computer at that time. I can't do it now. I can't even do it on a computer hardly. But mm-hmm. at that time, you could rattle out something like that when you got done talking. When you got done talking, I'd give you the answer.
Wow.
And he said I was the smartest one in school. In fact, when I quit school, he talked to me for 2 hours.
Trying to keep you in school. But you were bored with it, it sounds like.
I'd went to school 2 years with my sister and when I was 3 years old. I had enough schooling. But he tried to talk me into...
I think him going so young discouraged him to go on, you know, those 12 years.
Well, I learned that you used to be surprised a three-year-old can learn.
He'd have to go with his sister because she had to walk to school by herself. Her mother wouldn't let her go by herself.
We went
and
walked.
Would make him go with her.
We walked a mile and a half or 2 miles one way. We was there at 9 o'clock and stayed till 4. But I'm probably going to say now. But anyway, when I quit school, Cheryl Briggs taught me for about 2 hours, and he says. To get one teacher, I couldn't get by with this one teacher. I couldn't stand her. She was single and she wouldn't even pay attention to me. I couldn't get her to help me, and whatever she told me, I wouldn't absorb it. So I said, I can't have her. Well, he says, she's in the 10th grade and 11th grade. He says, you drop out of the 10th grade today and go into the 12th grade. You go into 12th grade, take 12th grade subjects, and next year, come back and take 11th grade. And I said, see, I guarantee you she won't be here when you come back to the 10th grade. But he wanted me to drop from the 10th, go to the 10th, from the 12th grade and back down, backwards. And I said, no, that don't sound good to me. No, I didn't. But I wished 1,000 times that I had graduated, because I had had a better life. I couldn't get in
well,
there.
Well, they do have it now, for younger people do it. You know, going to get their diploma that way.
Yeah. I mean, you could still do it, but you think that you think things would have been different had you gotten your diploma. You would have worked your way up, gone professionally.
Yeah. I went for during the war. When I was 17 years old, draft age, 17, 18 years old. They took me for one examination down to Detroit or Fort Wayne. Mm-hmm. Fort Wayne's in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
Fort Wayne is in Detroit, whether you think it's in it is or not.
Yeah, I noticed. I've been there.
They run me through there one time, and they give me a 4F classification. A 4F. Unfit for military service. Mm. I come back, I get a job at Rio now. That was back in 41. They wouldn't even give me an application paper. So, what did I do? I couldn't get it in the shop. They wasn't really making buck and a quarter an hour or something like that. I worked here on the farm for my folks for nothing, and I get a job day rate, 50 cents an hour, 10 cents an hour. I worked for a dime an hour, lots of time, dollar a day out here, just to have something to do. And that's why if I'd had an education, I might have got a job in a shop where I could sit and push pencil or something like that. But I've had to do manual physical labor all my life just about, or with these two hands, to make a living from what I've got. But ain't too much, but we never missed any meals.
And you may have done that.
Amen.
You may have done that.
I'm going to see if he's got to work early.